Yeah, so that worked. And then I really enjoyed that quiz that we did.
What would you say is people's average scores? Like, if we're in the 40s, what's...
Well, I just took a quick glance at some scores just a minute ago, just to see where... And there were some, there was one that, I don't know who these people are. I just see the scores, but someone who scored a 4.
4.
Oh, wow.
A 4. Okay. A 4 out of 50. Yeah, wow. So that means that's someone in a relationship that is completely not working at all.
So do you ever envy those so-called hashtag couples goals?
Well, you know, when you first fall in love with someone, you get butterflies every time you see them.
You lust them.
You're infatuated with them.
You want to be with them all the time, like best friends.
Do you want that to last forever?
Together, let's discover what it takes to say a massive yes to all the above. Through our topical discussions, our world-renowned guests that will help guide the way to a happier, sexier, and fun-loving relationship.
We're not doctors or therapists. We are just two normal individuals who have had many ups and downs in our 23-year relationship.
And counting.
We've amassed our own wisdom over the years, but we're still learning, just like you.
Nina and I believe you can have it all and still live your best lives, as long as you're willingly and consistently discover each other in new ways. And that right there is what the show is all about.
We're Nina.
And Roger.
And this is the Head of Hill Show.
Yeah, baby.
So today we're talking to Jennifer Lehr and her husband, Mike Bosworth. Jennifer is a marriage and family therapist, as well as an author of a book called The Magic Cake, you know, the 7 ingredients of the relationship ready person. Mike is well known throughout the business and sales world as a thought leader and a speaker. He is also an author of the best-selling book, Solution Selling. Together they created and co-founded
We can sell.
There you go. Sorry about that. A revolutionary do-it-yourself online educational application that helps couple improve trust, intimacy, safety, and connection in a relationship. Their mission is helping others create a life and a relationship of love and joy. So everybody, welcome Jennifer and Mike to the show.
How are you guys?
We're happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Good. So we took your little your quiz, and we wanted to know a little bit more about the outcomes of our answers.
Absolutely. I wasn't very happy because Roger didn't answer all of them the way I did. So I was like,
I think that's the beginning of the end.
Should we cancel the podcast now?
So did you guys compare your answers?
Yeah, we did. Yes. We did. As I was saying, mentioned to you guys before, we've been together 23 years, and I thought I really knew everything that needs to know. And then these little quiz like this brings out stuff that is like, questionable. So we're kind of eager to learn from you as to why our answers are not the same in certain scenarios.
Well, I went and saw what your scores were, and you both scored really high.
Yeah. So is that a good thing?
That's really good. You both are in very good shape. So
yeah, if you're both over 40, it's all good.
Yeah, we are.
I mean, on the score.
Yeah. Well, we're on the score and in real life.
Yeah. Where did you have different answers?
Well, I think on my side, it was some of the questions were, 100%.
They were 100% versus 75%.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, in my head, I was just like, I don't know if I know everything that's in her mind, but I think I know a good chunk of it.
Right.
Well, the question was, my partner and I are able to figure out how we trigger each other and resolve our conflict. I put 75% of the time we could do that. And I believe he put in 50%. Is that what it was?
Which one?
The first question.
I put
75. So that was good.
Yeah.
The second one, which was, my partner has an understanding of and an empathy for my family of origin. I put 100% because he knows very well what I've been through and he empathized with that. And I thought he would be 100%, but he says, no, he's...
I put 50 for that.
50 for that, which really was surprising, thinking like for 23 years, he's known everything about me that needs to know.
Well, that's about you. I was talking about mine, about me. So anyways, I got 42, she got 49. I think we're still good. I think we're still together.
Yeah. Well, but we can look at that. So it sounds like, Roger, that you don't feel that Nina always has 100% understanding of your family of origin struggles or complete empathy, that there's some areas that aren't 100%.
Yeah, we grew up very, very, very different. You know, her background and my background. So, I mean, there's just certain things that I find, I don't know, she gets confused about with my family. With her family, it's an open book. There's so many people in there and they're always together. So I'm with them more than she's with my family. I think that's all it was.
Right.
Right.
So what this does is you obviously, if you've been together happily for 23 years, you have an acceptance that she doesn't always understand your family fully, and you're okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did want to bring up there, I wrote an article quite a while ago called When Wounds Collide, and it's about how our family of origin wounds can get triggered when we're in a relationship. And it's really important to talk about our wounding so that our partner can understand who we are, why we get triggered by certain things, because it all comes out of a context. It's not, you know, just this thing that happens. So just bringing that up because it fits into, you know, the need to sort of have conversations about why we have the reactions we have and the feelings we have. But so Nina, are you okay that he doesn't always, you know, 100% of the time feel like you see what he's going through?
I'm okay with it now. But initially when I saw those answers, Jennifer, I was like kind of taken back. I was like, whoa, I thought we were 100% in almost everything. And we are. And I guess we are in the most important things that in our life. We put ourselves first before anything. So I think that's what works for us. But I was literally taken away by that. I was like, whoa, what do you mean? I don't know much about that. You know what I mean? So it was a good conversation to have. You know, just to see where he's at in terms of his, you know, certain things in life and where I'm at, which is fine, I guess, as a therapist, you would say, like, because it's to us, we don't always have to be exactly the same way in our thinking.
Yeah.
No, the point is to bring up conversations and build a bridge between the two different places.
Yeah, so that worked. And then I really enjoyed that quiz that we did.
What would you say is people's average scores? Like if we're in the 40s, what's...
Well, I just took a quick glance at some scores just a minute ago, just to see where, and there were some, there was one that, I don't know who these people are. I just see the scores, but someone who scored a 4.
4.
Oh, wow.
A 4. Okay. A 4 out of 50. Yeah, wow. So that means that's someone in a relationship that is completely not working at all. And then there's a lot of people in the 20s, a lot of people in the 30s, and there's some people in the 40s. And once in a great while, you get a 50. But if you're in the 40s, you're doing great.
Okay. So for someone that has a 4, would you say, you said that a relationship obviously is not working, but would you say, is it something that it's fixable at that point, or something that they can resolve?
Can they learn to love?
Really hard to know from the quiz. They'd actually have to go into a therapy. They wouldn't be able to, with a 4, they would need a therapist. They would not be able to work this out themselves. It's just too far apart, too low. So they would need to get a therapist, and very quickly it would be determined whether they could work on it or not.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
But you know, one thing we see a lot is the first partner will sign up for WeConcile, and then they don't get their partner to sign up with them. There's quite a bit of that, like a reluctant
partner. Yeah, so a one-sided kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you think that you find that, let's say somebody comes in with maybe less of a crazy score, like a 4, but they come in at like 25, half. Is some of this stuff, are you able to learn it? Are you able to, like, Mike, you're in sales. Nina and I are both in sales. We both sell real estate. So I know that when we coach some of the people that work for us, some of them get it and some of them will never get it. Is it the same thing with relationships? Right. Like, will some people kind of get it and some people just say...
A lot of people get it. I mean, both Jennifer and I came from horrible family of origins. Mm-hmm. And we both are on our second marriages. And we both done a ton of therapy to finally figure out how to, you know, live and love an abundant life. But boy, if it would have been based on our family of origin. Oof.
Yeah.
There are. Here's what I would say about whether, you know, basically, if both people want to work it out and they're willing to look at themselves and make changes, they can do it. That's really what determines it. I mean, if you're someone who says, I don't need to change, or this is you, or you're dead in the water, it has to be both people are like, I'm willing to look at myself. I'm willing to change. I'm willing to get vulnerable. You have to have that attitude. And then you can work through, you know, there's some really good therapists out there. There's also some not so great therapists, but there's some really good therapists out there who can really open you up into the hard stuff and help you work it out, even if it's really, you know, dismal.
Yeah.
Isn't one of the best ones in Toronto?
Oh, Sue Johnson.
Yeah.
I don't, is she in Toronto?
Yeah.
I don't,
what's her name?
Sue Johnson is the founder of Emotionally Focused Therapy for
Couples. Okay.
And she is, which is statistically the most successful form of couples therapy. And it works on getting down into the emotional part of the relationship. And I've done a lot of training through her training process. Anyway, if you've seen her work, she can really get people down into, through difficult stuff, into very deep places where people can start making changes.
Oh, and she's here located in Toronto, you said?
Yeah, we'll have to look her up.
Yeah.
She's in Canada.
I believe she's in Toronto.
She might be. I'm not sure. Okay. I know she's in Canada.
Yeah, we'll definitely look her up.
Yeah. She wrote a book called Hold Me Tight, which is for the general public. She has a lot of books written for therapists as well.
Nice.
Yeah. She's a trainer at this point. I don't think she's hireable as a therapist.
Right, right.
Oh, there you go. So she's training other people.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, we're going to definitely look her up and maybe get in touch with her. But speaking of therapy, Jennifer, since you're a therapist and Raj and I have been together for 23 years, like I said, we've never needed to go to therapy. Although we had so many ups and downs in our relationship, we sort of just self-educated ourselves and just learned through, you know, books or through reading or through, like I said, self-education and just help each other as a relationship that way. Now, my question to you is, at what point should couples seek therapy in their relationship?
Well, okay, that's a great question because most couples seek therapy way too late.
Okay.
Because by the time they get into therapy, it's, you know, the resentment has built and they are fighting constantly.
Right.
Blaming.
Right.
Blaming. And it's very difficult. I think personally, I mean, you guys are probably, I mean, that's great that you guys were able to work it through without therapy. And some couples can, but a lot of couples can't. It depends on so many factors. I personally think that if people start running into problems early in their relationship, like in the first 6 months, they definitely need to step into therapy because that's highly problematic.
Right. As early as 6 months.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, are there triggers? Are there signs that people should be looking out for?
Yeah. So if you don't feel emotionally safe, okay, that's a big sign. If you don't trust your partner is a big sign. If you're fighting constantly, that's a big sign. Because you want to be, you know, you want to be happy and you want to feel, you know, close
and safe.
And safe. And if that isn't happening, well, what's going on?
Makes sense. Total sense.
Well, you brought up safety. And I heard, I don't know if it was a podcast or an interview you were on, and you talked about relationship safety.
Yeah.
Now, how can you explain that to people out here, like other than just, you know, are you going to leave me? Is that what you mean? Or is there more depth to it?
It's about emotional safety. So can I tell you my deepest fears? Can I tell you my deepest dreams? Do I feel like if I'm freaked out, you'll be there for me? If we're in a fight, are you still there for me? Or, you know, can I even when we're in a fight, are we able to be connected? Or do we have to disconnect? There's just a lot of elements of, do I feel like you aren't going to try to hurt me emotionally? Yeah. Are you sarcastic? Do you criticize me? All that stuff.
Contempt.
Contempt. Yeah.
It's a nasty word.
All that stuff really blows safety out of the water. And I mean, imagine you're with someone for 20 years and you don't feel like they've got your back. I mean, it's not a good feeling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So clearly you sound like you've had some of these experiences in your marriage before, your first marriage.
Yes.
And we've read a little bit about both of you. And how did you two get together with, you know, you both had different marriages. How did that bring you guys to where you are now? You seem very loving and we loved everything we read about you two. And we were very eager to see how you guys got together and
created
this life.
Well, so we were introduced by a mutual friend and we really clicked right away. And when we did start, and we had a lot of chemistry and just a fondness and an automatic fondness for each other. And when we did start going out, we did run into some issues where I would do something that would freak him out or he'd do something that would freak me out. And we did some therapy. We didn't do a lot of therapy, but we did do some therapy. And we had to really talk about, you know, and also I have a specific skill set because I'm a therapist. Right. So I'm actually able to realize, okay, he's completely, you know, he's lost right now. I feel lost too, but I'm capable of reaching and I'm capable of explaining, you know, what triggered me and finding out what triggered him and talking about it. So we put it, so in other words, he grew up in a childhood where when stressful things happened, he felt all alone and his stomach would sort of clench in and get cold. So when he got upset and his stomach was clenched in and felt cold, I would say, well, what do you think got triggered? And he could relate it to stuff because that was a signal that he was going back to a childhood experience and we weren't even in the present anymore.
Yeah.
So knowing how to talk about, you know, and talk about, for instance, if I got emotional, that was a trigger for him because he's been with people who were
crazy,
emotional without any.
I love it.
Really got crazy. And so if I got emotional and I'm obviously, you know, females tend to be a little bit more emotional than men.
Just a little bit.
I would have to explain, well, I am emotional, but I'm not crazy. And this is why I'm emotional. And it actually makes sense why I'm emotional. And this is my strategy for dealing with being upset, whereas his strategy is anger or withdrawing or something else. And so we were able to talk it out and figure out, you know, why we were responding as we were responding to difficult events and each other.
But one other thing I'd like to mention is that when we first started going out, both of us had basically said, well, we tried marriage and it wasn't happy. So marriage is off the table.
Right.
I mean, from the very beginning.
Right. Yeah. But that's not how we worked it out. We also, we did say that, and that's true. But, you know, we were obviously built enough trust that that statement evaporated. But I was writing Weconcile and Mike was editing and we were talking about a lot of what I was writing. And that actually, that information that we educated ourselves while I was creating Weconcile, and that completely changed our relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's part of the reason why we're doing this podcast as well. So we can learn along with everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, I could give you sort of an outline of the steps if you want, because I know you want, you know, it'd be good to get your people who are listening to understand the steps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. This is the steps that you have in your book or?
Okay. No, the book I wrote is just a little book for people who are not in relationships to get ready, not only to prepare themselves, but to also pick the right person, what to look for. And so that book is sort of a pre, you know, before you're in a relationship book. Weconcile for once you're in a relationship.
Okay.
So, and it's a quick, easy read. It's actually sort of a fun book. It has got exercises in it.
Oh, really?
But I'm going to give you the steps of creating a relationship that feels safe.
Perfect.
And emotionally safe and connected. So the first thing that has to happen is you have to assess what is wrong, where you have different goals or different communication styles, if there are trust issues, if there's anything going on like drug abuse or an affair, anything that requires professional help. So the first step is what is wrong. You have to figure that out. And this is if you're working without a therapist. If you're working with a therapist, they'll do all this work for you.
So if I say what is wrong, like if Nina and I are in this situation, I mean, she's going to find things that are wrong with me and I'm going to find things that are wrong with her. So you just kind of jot them down and you work on them. Is that what it is? Or?
Well, you have to know that, okay, I'm struggling with this part of him and he's struggling with this part of her. And why is that? Why are you struggling with this part of her? Why is he struggling?
Step two kind of brings that up.
You have got to, I mean, it isn't pointing fingers. It's just identifying where the problems
are. Right. So being pretty much honest with your feelings and say what you're feeling, how you're making me wrong. Got it.
Yeah. Like Mike is extremely extroverted. I'm pretty introverted. He likes people all the time. I'm like, oh my God, can we live without all these people? I mean, really. And, you know, but of course this is what makes him happy. So we figure out a way to compromise so that I still get enough alone time and aren't always people parading through the house and he gets enough social contact. But it's something that, you know, for me, it was like, oh my God, he's so extroverted. What do I do about this? And that's obviously an easier situation than some, but it's just an example of where we're different that can create some friction.
Yeah.
So the second step is learn about your cycle. Now the cycle is your actions. So I'm going to give you an example.
Okay. Well, let me first tell you that I define the cycle as the fight you've had 100 times or 1,000 times or 10,000 times, depending how long you've been together.
Or in our case, hundreds of thousands of times.
Possibly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the cycle would be someone comes home late for dinner and the spouse is like, I feel you don't care about me and starts crying. And then the person who's late says, I was working really hard and you don't understand, and would slam the door or go out to the bar. And then the other person's crying harder. And this happens frequently, this kind of scenario where they can't seem to communicate about what's going on. And they get caught where this person cries, that person yells, that person cries louder, that person leaves.
Right.
That's a cycle. So there's many different cycles. That's an example of a cycle. So you've got to identify what your cycle is because you have control over your cycle.
Right.
You have control over your action. Cycle is made up of action.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Level two of Weekend Style is defining your cycle. And a big thing for me was defining it, naming it, and then making your cycle the enemy, not your partner.
Right. Well, it makes sense.
Remember how you...
Yes. It makes sense.
In right. which way? Like, what would you...
You yeah. give it a name, and right. now, instead of blaming each other, you can kind of blame your cycle.
What you say is that we've gotten caught in our cycle again, instead of it was you, because those kind of actions are co-created.
Yeah. So what we do is, not to interrupt you guys, but what we do for the past 10 years, what Raj and I have done, is when that happens, we say, it's just a story that we're telling ourselves. It's the story in our head. So we call right. it the story in our relationship. And I think that's what has helped us tremendously to navigate through it. Because when we do things that we piss each other off, it's like, we know it's a story. It's a story that I'm telling myself. You're not that. You know what I mean?
Or I'll tell them the story that I have in my head, and she'll say, no, this is what I actually thought, or whatever the case may be. So we clear up the air, knowing that this is a story in my head. This is where I went with it. Where did you go with it?
So we gave it a name. We gave it a story.
Right. Yeah. And so you're using the story as a way to stay out of the cycle.
Oh, to stay out of the cycle.
Because instead of yelling and screaming, you're saying, okay, we've got the story has emerged, and we need to step out of this instead of misbehaving.
Well, I think that happens right after the yelling and screaming.
That's fine. Because as long as you can stop it sooner or later, and it's okay to stop it after you yell, as long as you go, oh, we got caught in something and we need to
stop. Well, that's exactly it. That's what I was going to ask you, is that if you're yelling and screaming per se, but you realize that the story is there and you stop it, you're like, okay, it's a story. We're out.
Yeah.
We're done with this conversation.
Yeah, that works. The third step is learn the language of attachment. So attachment is, do you guys know what attachment theory?
No, I would love for you to emphasize a little bit more on that for our listeners, because that's something we were really interested in.
It was one of my questions.
So we won't get into the history of attachment theory, but it does have a big history started with Bowlby. But anyway, attachment theory is the mammalian need to feel safe and connect. And it's emotional. So it's not just humans, mammals need to feel connected and safe to their family, their whatever, their group.
Your dogs need to feel attached to you.
And so the language of attachment is when you communicate, instead of saying, why didn't you pick the milk up at the store? You would say, why didn't you get me a present for my birthday? Let's just use that as an example. You would say instead, I feel so hurt because you're so important to me that you forgot me. You know, how could you forget me?
Right.
So in other words, you're not talking about the surface level of the problem and accusing, you're going down to your deep emotional needs and wounds and fears. And that you can communicate there if you have a partner, of course, who can communicate there. But that's where you got to learn that language. You have to learn how to communicate in that area, because that's where you solve the problems. You don't solve it on whose house do we go to for, you know, the holidays. You solve it on, these are my deep feelings and this is my need. And how do we meet in this place where we have deep needs and feelings?
And that's where the intimacy really comes out.
Right. And it's vulnerable too. Attachment communication is vulnerable communication. So you don't have people who don't know how to communicate vulnerably, they might have a hot relationship for a while, but they're not going to do very well in terms of really staying connected emotionally.
Yeah.
So that's the step three. Step four is unpack where your feelings are coming from. This is usually historical. So let's suppose you did forget, you know, I had a client once who the husband forgot to buy something at the store and she just freaked out. I mean, it clearly wasn't about the can of tomato sauce or whatever it was he forgot. And, you know, he didn't know what was hitting him, but he was very disconnected. He didn't pay attention to her emotionally. And she had a huge trauma and easily felt like the world forgot about her. So we had to get her to start connecting to, because she wasn't connected to this at all. She thought she had a great childhood. We had to start helping her connect. I had to start helping her connect to, I felt forgotten. I wasn't put first. My sister was the one who was on a pedestal, not me. And all those feelings would come flying out if he made a little mistake.
Yeah. So it had nothing really to do with tomato sauce. It had to do with forgetting about that person.
It had to do with being forgotten and what that meant for her.
Well, this totally makes sense.
Yeah. And that he was someone who, the way he lived his life, he easily forgot her.
So how would you unpack that, like you say?
Well, I unpacked it on both sides, with her getting her in touch with her deep feelings of being forgotten and getting him more connected to feeling his own feelings so he could pay attention to her feelings instead of being overwhelmed by them.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. And then there's two more steps. So the step five would be begin to share the stories that inform your feelings. So that's educating your partner on why you're having this feeling. You know, my father beat me when I was three. Right. And so I'm really scared when you get angry. I mean, there's stories attached to all our feelings generally. And sometimes they're really severe like that. And sometimes they're mild, but they still leave a resonance in our
emotional trauma.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they leave a resonance. Yeah.
Absolutely. We carry it with them, with us all the time. I mean.
Right. It's, right. It's part of like our fingerprint.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and then the last step would be to move into expressing more vulnerability, which is, you know, as you can say, vulnerably, not, I hate you, you forgot the beans, and I can't believe it, and you're a horrible husband. Instead of saying that, saying, oh my God, that took me right back to the past, and I feel crushed, and how could you forget me? You're going to get a much better response if you say that instead of, you're a horrible husband, how did you do this, and scream for half the night.
But a lot of men struggle with vulnerability because they were raised by macho football coach fathers who said, don't cry and don't express your feelings, right, and don't be a girl and all that. And so they lived their whole life bottling up their feelings.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course. To be able to do it myself. So.
Right. Yeah. So what was your path, Roger, with getting, I mean, I don't know where you started, but what was your path with feelings?
Just the same thing. Like you say, the macho, don't tell them how you feel. They'll use it against you or whatever, you know, like,
right.
Yeah.
It took him a while to tell me he loved me, to be honest, for a long time. It was just like, he's like, I've never said it. So I don't know how it feels.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was me pulling teeth with him, pulling it out of him over the years. You know?
She used to say a phrase, because I would never really say I love you. So she always asked me, how much do you love me? And I would say all kinds. But that was my escape to actually saying, I love you. And she turned it into a term of endearment recently. Like she says that kind of to our kids, how much do you love me? And they say all kinds. And I actually told her, I said, you know, that where that actually came from was not, I don't want to say not a good place, but it wasn't where you think. It wasn't like how I was telling you, I love you. It was my way of not saying it.
Right. But I knew that he loved me. He just did not come out of him. You know what I mean? Like obviously from his love, his heart, his body, his language, his tonality, everything said it. It just, the words would not come out of his mouth. Like, and it took him a long time.
Right. It was almost the name of this
and
podcast.
And you needed the words.
And I needed the words. I'm all about words. And I need to hear those words. So you may say that sort of turned him into a word man. Now he never stops saying it.
You open up a can of worms.
Yeah, I mean, depending on how you grow up, I had a lot of trouble with the words I love you too, because I grew up in a household where nobody ever said that ever.
Yeah.
So it was very vulnerable for me to
say that. My father never ever said it to any of us.
Yeah.
Right. But you didn't have a problem saying I love you.
No, because my mother said it.
Your mother said it. Yeah.
But my father didn't.
Right.
Well, my household was, I mean, if you want to picture it, it was kind of like the biker family, you know, like leather jackets, jeans, and you know, slick back hair.
Very tough.
Yeah, tough type of people. So that's the way I won't say that my parents never said, I love you, all that stuff. We had a great relationship, but it was just not something that I would say out of, I guess, fear of being attached of some sort. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, or looking weak.
Or maybe if you say that, it means you owe something or are responsible for something. I mean, there's all kinds.
There you go. I think it's mostly that too. But hey, he does. He does now. So,
well, yeah. You trained
him. I did. Thanks, Mike.
It's true. We do train our partners. We do.
Well, like Dr. Phil used to say, you teach people how to treat.
Absolutely. 100%. And that's exactly what it is. He taught me his way and I taught him my way. And sort of we combine it. It works for us.
I've learned to say I love you and I put the toilet seat down.
And so the reason we want to get into the expressing more vulnerability is because we want to be accessible, responsive, and engaged with our partners. So we want to be available to them. We want to respond to them. We want to engage with them. And that's what makes for an emotionally connected relationship. We can get over all kinds of disagreements, all kinds of different ways of seeing things or different if we are able to stay accessible, responsive, and engaged with each other. And that comes from an acronym, ARE, from Sue Johnson's book, Hold Me Tight. She talks about that, the importance of that in a relationship.
Yeah, that's amazing, actually. That's, you know, people start looking into that aspect. They can find different ways to communicate, different ways to be.
Well, I think what Jennifer, what you just mentioned, it's being vulnerable. I think that's the most important thing in a relationship, because you're so transparent when you're vulnerable that there's nothing there, nothing hidden. It's all out in the open. You know what I mean?
And that's our humanness. And that's what makes us lovable.
But you know, there's a small percentage of females who, when their males finally learn to be vulnerable, it's almost a turnoff to them because they've been conditioned to be attracted to the strong silence.
Right. The bad boys.
Right. And they'll need some help.
They'll need some help. Yep. Yeah.
Those people will need
help. Well, I think eventually they realize that that's not what they need. Honestly, like growing up, I felt that. I wanted that. I wanted like that strong, manly figure, which he is and all that. But he's not closed off. He's very open. And he was a little bit at the beginning, but he's very open. So I think a lot of us do sort of initially attract that as women. But then you realize, no, that's not what you need.
Right.
What you need is someone that's vulnerable and open and loving and transparent with you.
Right. Yeah. The new model of maleness, not the John Wayne.
Right.
Model. Yeah.
Did we get to the number six or?
Yeah. Number six was just moving into more. So number five was sharing stories, yep. the stories that inform your feelings. And number six was beginning to express more vulnerability.
Writing these things down.
Yeah. So that's just a sort of one way to look at, you know, rebuilding a partnership. And right now, the way We Can Sell is set up is it walks you through, like, and we may be doing some reorganizing of it so you don't have to do it in this particular order. But right now it's set up so that first you do an assessment of your relationship, what works, what doesn't work, what your goals are. And then you do learn about the cycle. And then you do learn about attachment. And then you learn about the different ways we perceive. So in other words, when Mike gets the cold, tight stomach, he had to be able to realize that, to be able to use that to communicate. So we work with what's called the lenses. So what are you thinking? What are you feeling? What is your sensation? Are you having any images? What's going on in your sensate reality when you're struggling, when you're in what we call a disruption, right, because you're disrupted from your partner. And then after that, level five, we look at why you're in this relationship at this time, you know, what led you into this relationship. And then level six, we're looking at your history. And so it just, there's 24 levels. Most people don't need nearly that many.
I'd like you to spend a couple minutes on level 14.
Which one? Oh, storytelling.
Because it's so important to a relationship.
Yeah, we have a level 14 teaches people. It's a communication module where we teach people how to actually sit down, face each other, and go through a protocol of how do we connect. And it goes step by step. It's very...
It's connective listening where you take turns. One person agrees, all I'm going to do is listen to you and reflect back what you tell me. And then at the end, I'm going to ask you, did I get you? And once we get that far, now we can take turns and you can listen to me that way. But it's really total listening.
So you're saying I would talk to Nina and then Nina would repeat, listen, and then repeat everything I say or say what she got out of my story or?
Or reflect it back in her words and say, is that right?
Yeah, she would tell you, she would say, so you would say blah, blah, blah. And she'd say, so what you said is you're feeling blah, 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 blah. And I get that. She wouldn't say, but I don't agree. It's not about agreeing or disagreeing. It's about, do you get what your partner's trying to communicate?
Yeah. So you're not telling your opinion about it. You're just kind of saying what you heard from what they said.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
And then validate, did I get you?
And a lot of couples can't do that. Couples come into therapy and they're talking over each other. They don't know how to say, okay, I heard what you just said. You're feeling this way. I get that.
Yeah. Just a defense mechanism.
Exactly. They're in a defense zone. They're just trying to get their point across and they're not listening to the other person.
Right.
Right. So anyway, that's level.
That's 14. Level 14. So
that's amazing. I think everybody should take that level, whether they have problem or not. I think communication is the key, you know?
Yeah. It's just some people aren't ready for it right away.
Because of the defense.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Because I'm right and you're wrong. And you know.
Well, you mentioned before, I listened to a few of your things before we call with you. Now, there was something you said about certain important qualities you need in a successful relationship.
Like
what would be very important?
What are those qualities? Let's think, because I don't remember what I said at that time. But there's always a lot of qualities. So, I mean, you have to be trustworthy. You have to have integrity. You have to have, I mean, can you imagine being in a relationship with someone you didn't trust? Oh, my God.
It goes back to the safety.
Yeah, you have to be accountable. You have to be vulnerable. You have to have empathy. Empathy is so important. Gratitude is really helpful. I mean, who wants to be in a relationship with someone who doesn't appreciate them?
And you have to take responsibility for your own stuff.
Which is accountability. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that some of those qualities are actually in the little book, the Magic Cake book.
I find this stuff, I mean, with communication, you can get past any of this. Like, you know, jealousy and, you know,
dishonest.
Yeah. Or just different opinions in general. You can, with you know, proper communication, you can get to the bottom of these things and see that there's no reason to be jealous or no reason to be insecure about the way they feel about you or whatever.
No reason's kind of judgmental.
Well, that works if you're a fairly high-functioning couple, but let's suppose you're a couple where I'm thinking of a couple right now, and one partner had extreme trauma. And so so when the girlfriend would go out with her friends, you know, they'd go to a party or whatever. She wasn't going out to pick anyone up. She was going out to hang out with her friends who she loved, her girlfriends. The partner, the man, would get suicidal because his trauma was so intense. There's couples out there that really have big, big struggles. And so it isn't so if you're a certain level of functioning, communication is all it takes. But if you've got trauma, that's game changing. And you have to get that person needed severe healing. Like, how could he trust that? I mean, his mother left him when he was a baby. So he had abandonment issues through the roof. So he would need a lot of therapy on, I'm actually safe. This woman's trustworthy. She loves me. But he would get suicidal and use it to torture her so that she couldn't leave.
Wow.
So communication is great, but there's situations that are out of the regular realm of what.
And there's a level on trauma and we can solve that can be taken out of order.
Right? Yeah, I think it's 16.
Yeah. That's crazy.
The reason why I say communication is, I mean, everybody has these kind of trust issues or you know, is somebody cheating on me or that kind of stuff when they start a relationship. And I remember for a long time, Nina used to work as a waitress and she was always working with people. So her banter or her flirt kind of thing was very prominent. So if you talk to somebody, she would talk and she'd be very, and you like.
I was a bartender, so I needed to be that way.
So as a guy looking in, as the boyfriend looking in.
That's why you got great tips.
There you go. I did. And then he'd come home. He would go through my apron. It would be full of tips, Mike. Or business cards.
But Roger, what did that do to you?
Well, at first, I mean, you know what? You go there, you go to the same bar with your friends, and your friends are like, oh, look at your girl. She's talking to this guy or that or whatever. So what I did at the end is I'm not a very jealous person, but, you know, when people throw it at you so often, you're going to start to believe some of the stuff they say. So I just said, you know, we grew up in Ottawa. So it was, you know, we had like a little club district or whatever. I would just go to the farthest club and make my way down. And by the end of the night, we make it at Nina's club. So I don't have to see her doing that all day. And my friends.
Right. Yeah. You protected yourself.
He did. Because he knew I was doing that it's my personality to be that way. But he knew that I was his. I was his girlfriend. I loved him. So what I was doing at work, it was just work.
It's part of the game. It's part of the game.
Yeah.
That's it.
It was like you were a Broadway actor.
There you go. But he didn't necessarily want to see it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Of course not. Yeah. No, I think that was a really wise decision. Yeah.
And our communication was basically that when I spoke to her, she was like, I don't care about any of these people. I'm just doing it to, they're my regulars, they're whatever. And she gave me all the business cards, do whatever you want with them, you know?
It was literally, it's my job, right? Like, I'm out there to work and make these people happy and serve them to my best ability. And that's what I did. So,
right.
And that was not, obviously didn't sit very well with him at the times. And he,
just something like that. We communicated, we got past it.
But that's a good example. Yeah. Good example of something that's difficult that you both talked about and figured a way to navigate through.
Well, speaking of difficult, what would you guys, like both different opinions, I guess a male point of view and a female point of view. With this situation, everybody's kind of stuck together. They're spending a heck of a lot more time together.
Yeah, this quarantine.
So what suggestions would you give people that are struggling with that?
Well, there's a lot of therapists working on Zoom. it's a challenge. It's a challenge if you aren't already in a harmonious place. Like for Mike and I, it's no big deal at all. But for a lot of people, oh my God, get out of my space. I need, you know, it's a big deal. So I did a blog post on that and it's not coming to mind, but there is a blog post. One of the last three or four blog posts I've done is about how to dealing with your partner during a pandemic, like what to do. But basically it's an opportunity to find a way to not only take space within the apartment or within the area, but also talk about, you know, what's going on. But it's, if people don't have good skills, it's going to be very, very challenging.
Right. Or some really obnoxious kids running around exactly. Or, you know.
Well, we had two very like situations that this pandemic did to relationships where we, not necessarily to us, but people we know. There was one couple that, you know, spending all that time together, they were a spectacular couple. They even had a podcast on relationships, all that kind of stuff. And they separated because of this.
Wow.
They couldn't handle
wow.
each other together.
Wow.
And then, like I told you, both Nina and I are in real estate. And we had, just before this pandemic, we had a couple that we went to go see about selling their home. And they were getting divorced. That was the reason why they wanted to sell their home.
Well, they had two small children, Jennifer. And I just walked in there and I felt their energy. And it was great. And I don't know if I can read people's mind or whatever it is. When they told me they were getting divorced, I kind of got goosebumps. And I'm like, why? They're like, well, what? You don't want to sell a house? I'm like, no, I'd love to sell your house, but I don't think you should get divorced because you have great energy and you have two beautiful children.
They lived in the same house together, all that kind of stuff, right, while they were separated. So when all this happened, the quarantine stopped, they weren't willing to have anybody in their home. So they said they're going to wait. Well, we just contacted them recently and they said, you know, this quarantine did wonders for their relationship. They're staying together.
They made them realize that they don't want to leave each other, that they love each other and their family and their children. And I was like, Mike, I've never been happier to lose a listing like this, you know, like.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you had a little message for them and they listened.
I guess, but I was so happy. I was so proud of, like, I'm like, they worked it out. I knew inside, I knew their energy was amazing and they shouldn't leave, you know. But anyway, that was a very happy story.
But I'm thinking that their disconnect was probably something like that him going to work and her being at home or whatever. Now that he's spending more time, maybe her love language is just quality time and that's all they needed.
Yeah. It sounds like they had an adjustment and they didn't know how to navigate through the adjustment. Right. And this is what happens. I think sometimes people stay together too long and other times they quit too soon, you know, and that's an example of a couple that was going to quit too soon because they were in a quandary and they didn't know how to adjust to the change, but then they did it. Sometimes people stay together too long where the thing's just falling apart and you know, if you're struggling that bad enough that you want to leave, do some therapy first. You can probably work it out. You know, there's a good chance anyway, before you just throw away, you know, your family and your life you've built together, because that's a big deal.
Absolutely. And we sell real estate in 15 years. We've been doing this. We've seen so many couples break their marriage and their life too quick and too early. And we were like, wish you could reconsider. Like in my head, I would always say, wish you could reconsider or get maybe do some sort of therapy. So those people that are listening to this right now, they're going through that and they're not sure if they should divorce or break their marriage or their family. I want you to just and maybe explain a little bit. What is the most important element of therapy that therapy provides for a couple?
Well, a therapy is a third perspective. It's also someone who facilitates getting the people to communicate differently.
Right.
And basically stops the couple from, you know, fighting in the moment. You stop them. You don't let them start screaming. You stop. I mean, you, as a couple's therapist, I had to be very active and say, no, stop. You're not doing that right now. And let's find out what's going on that's making you try to attack him or whatever's going on. What's slow them down, get them into their deeper feelings. And, you know, that's a very specific skill set to be able to do that. Right. A lot of even regular therapists can't do that. It takes training, I think, generally to be good at couples therapy. But the couple needs, they obviously, you know, we have closed systems and open systems. A closed system means there's no new information coming in and the pattern's going to repeat and repeat. And we have to open the system up, let new information come in so that there can be change. Well, that's the purpose of education, of therapy, of workshops, of all that is to let new information in so we can create a change.
Yeah. And I guess that needs to be done, like you said before, in the early days, so the doors don't get closed and, you know.
Well, you want to, if you're struggling, why wait?
Exactly. Well,
I mean, why? It's your one life. Why wait?
But as real estate people, what you might want to do to differentiate yourself is put in your listing agreement, if you decide not to get divorced, we'll tear this agreement up.
Right? That'd be good. That'd be good. Well, we should have done that a long time ago because over the years, Mike, we've seen so many families get broken down and my heart just breaks for them. You know, my heart just breaks for them. But, you know, you could say we are some sort of therapist without the education because we also have helped reconcile a lot of couples. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. The other thing to bring up is, you know, people fall in love because of chemistry. And also they fall in love, if you know Imago therapy, they fall in love because there's something that gets triggered that has to do with the person's past. In other words, you pick partners that will actually have the potential to heal us. Like Nina taught Roger, essentially, how to be more expressive emotionally, we'll say. Yeah. That's so she brought something to, I mean, obviously you give each other. So when we get into a relationship, we get into a relationship because there's some magnetic pull generally, and there's chemistry. But the reason we don't make it is because we don't have the tools. We haven't been taught to deal with, I mean, who gets educated on relationships? We learn by osmosis in our families of origin. So people don't have the tools they need to work through some of the hard stuff that happens in a relationship. We're not prepared. We're just not prepared as humans when our partner who we love and adore does something that just floors us, and we don't know how to talk about it. We don't know what to do about it. And then we start, you know, acting differently, and they start acting differently, and the thing starts falling apart.
My first wife, you know, we both had alcoholic fathers, and gee, we're attracted to each other, you know? So we were both attracted to each other for the unfinished business from our parents. Didn't work out very well, but...
So basically what we do is we get into a relationship, we bring in all our past with us, what we know, what we grew up with, into that relationship, and we expect that person that we're with to understand exactly who we are, where we're coming from, when they don't know anything about our past, when they haven't lived
it. That's exactly right,
yeah.
And would you say that's how things break, that the couples don't get to know each other?
They don't get to know, they're not... Okay, so they're often not curious.
Yeah.
The need to be seen. So this is a wound a lot of people have. They weren't seen properly as children. And so the need to be seen is so strong that they need to be seen, but they're not curious about who the other person is. Well, that means they're in a one-person system. It's not a two-person system. It's one. I need you to see me, not we need to see each other. I'm curious about you, and it has to be curiosity on both sides. Why did my partner react this way? What's going on for him? Oh my God, I feel bad for him. It's always, you don't see how hurt I am. You don't see what you're doing to me. So when you have that kind of voice, you know you're dealing with past stuff, and you know that you've got to get it, work with it so that curiosity can open up and empathy.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. It's great.
I've been with Nina for 23 years, and she's got so many personalities. I get along with all of them.
It is true.
You're a flexible man, Roger.
But he says that all the time, Mike. He always says that. He's like, you have so many personalities, and you know, I'm fine with all of them.
Maybe we should rename you Civil.
You as long as they're all talking to each other, fine.
He was always asked us how we do about we've been together so long, and you know, we work together. We're actually constantly together. And actually, I was going to ask you that a question. Is that something that's healthy? Are we always being together?
Mike and I are constantly together. I think it's great if you're a couple that can do it.
We've been doing it since day one, literally. We've done almost every job together. Yeah. And you know, now we have kids together.
Yeah, I mean, you have a shared mission. And your mission was probably to raise kids and create abundance together. I mean, that's a mission.
Yeah, I'd like to say I manifested every single moment of my life.
Yeah. But sometimes couples have two different, like one person wants to travel around the world and the other wants to stay home every day. I mean, that's a much harder thing to negotiate than a couple that wants to do everything together. I mean, that's pretty nice. Yeah.
Well, I know you started this after your
Reconcile,
your books, all that kind of stuff. You did that after your first marriage, right? Am I correct?
Yes. My first marriage ended in 2007 and I started Reconcile, I believe in 2009.
Oh, there you go.
Started researching for it. I wasn't writing it yet. Started researching. 2010, I started doing a lot of couples training, extra training, and began to structure it and start.
So all the stuff you learned over those years, now knowing that stuff now, do you think you could have repaired or stayed with your previous spouses, both of you?
I don't. We did a lot of couples counseling. Yeah. He had a lot of anger and he was unwilling to really dig down and figure out what was driving all that. And I was on a steep learning path and he was on a much shallower learning path. And I'm very interested in emotional intelligence, and our worlds became too different. Yeah. And there wasn't enough interest for
both.
There wasn't a way. I mean, I tried. I stayed in it longer than I should have.
There you go.
What about Mike?
I did.
What about Mike? How was that?
Well, I was in 26 years because I had three kids, but the last 2 or 3 years, we had a standing therapy appointment every Saturday morning. And two-thirds of the time, she hated going to the therapist because when we were at the therapist, she had to let me finish a sentence. And so two-thirds of the time, she'd say, well, you're the one that's unhappy. You go. I don't want to go today. So she won't go to therapy and work with you. That's a problem,
right,
too.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, so I guess what you had said before, like the unwillingness to change or even try.
Right.
And then with Jennifer's ex, I guess it's, you know, you just grew apart. You're two completely different people, two different goals, two different everything.
Yeah, we grew apart and he was unwilling to go into some deeper stuff that would have helped us connect better.
Well, it sounds like you two found each other and you're absolutely soulmates. I can see that. I can hear in your voices. So congratulations. Yeah. We're very happy for you too.
Thank you.
Well, we're happy for you too also. Yeah. We love your score.
Thank you.
Even the 42 is spectacular.
Well, again, when we talked about that, there was a few things. Like there was one particular question. It's, let's say, number 10, I can rely on my partner to be there for me emotionally. I put 75% because, I mean, there's some things that I know that I probably won't be there for
her. I put 75 in that too.
But she put 100, but she's saying, I'll be there 100% for you. But I know that there's certain things that she can't be and there's certain things I can't be. So that's why I put 75. I guess I'm just too honest.
you're coming from a more logical place and she's coming from a more
emotional
place.
Absolutely. 100%.
Because her intention is I'm there 100% and you're being more of a realist. Well, that's impossible. So I'll put it 75, which is fine.
Yeah. You know, I mean, thinking just having this conversation now, talking about it and thinking how Roger is, his personality, it's 100% that he's extremely logical. And that's why our business has been successful for 15 years because I lacked emotional when we were at a listing appointment or something and he'd be more logical. So we've done that throughout everything in our relationship, I think. He's a logical one.
Right.
Emotional
so you flirt with the people you're getting listings right. with and he does the logical 100%. Part. It works.
Yes, and it works.
That's it.
So now that you clarified that, I'm no longer mad at him for 42.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Well, thank you both so much for coming today to our show. And I'm sure, I know for a fact, our listeners are going to have a lot of value from this episode. And we would love to have you again on our show at some point.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. It was fun.
We will talk about sales.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. We'll get into that.
That'd be great.
All right. Great.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, you guys.
Enjoy. All right.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, please hit subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on whichever platform you're tuning in from.
It means the world to us to have your support on our show in this little mini way.
You can also stalk us on Instagram at Head Over Heels Show for more juicy stuff.
If you have any questions, send them via email at us@hohshow.com or DM us on socials.
Thank you for having us between your ears. And as always, we wish you what we have.